I'm Jared Gallo.
And I'm Julia Karen.
And welcome to episode 6 of the Washington Bullpen. Pretty packed episode this week. We've got a section on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, we're also going to be talking to fellow CNS reporter Juan Herrera about the FBI's investigation into the NCAA.
Yeah, with March Madness coming up, there's a lot of political controversy surrounding the basketball tournament this year. So we're going to delve into that a little bit.
Yeah, finally on Behind the Bureau, we bring in Timmy Chong to talk about beer legislation. But first, the Supreme Court had a busy week.
First up, the court now has the potential to hear a case on discrimination based on sexual orientation in the workplace after a federal appeals court in New York decided that companies cannot fire or discriminate in hiring based on sexual orientation.
Right. So this falls under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And essentially what this says is that your employer can't discriminate based on things like race, religion, or sex. And what this court ruled is that sexual orientation falls under sex, and that's a big deal.
Right. The New York court is saying that the sex portion of the race, religion, and sex in the Civil Rights Act of 1964 applies to the sex of the employee as well as the employee's partner, thus extending it to sexual orientation as well. This suit is actually from 2010, and it was just decided.
Right. And another reason that this is interesting is because if you look at some of the dissents in this ruling, what they stipulate is, well, we can't say that the sex portion of Title VII qualifies sexual orientation because it wasn't written that way. If you're an originalist, it doesn't explicitly say sexual orientation, so we would have to amend the law in order to make it say sexual orientation. Sex alone won't cover it. So it'll be interesting to see if this gets kicked up to the Supreme Court to see whether they rule on whether or not the sex alone under Title VII means sexual orientation as well. All right, let's talk unions.
The Supreme Court heard the Janus versus the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees case this week as well.
What this case is about is whether a 1977 case, Abood versus Detroit Board of Education, is still okay. So what is Abood versus Detroit Board of Education? Well, what the Supreme Court ruled unanimously was that when unions collect fair share fees from non-members that support collective bargaining, so bargaining for things like pay, hours, things of that nature, unions can collect these fees from members and non-members alike. And they can't use them to subsidize political activities. The Abood court says it's perfectly constitutional for public sector unions to make non-members pay these fees. They benefit from the collective bargaining and the contracts that are conceived through those payments. And right now, only 22 states and the district permit these kinds of public sector union agency collecting fees. One interesting thing to note is that Eugene Volokh, who's a right-leaning libertarian, wrote an amicus brief, and he essentially said that compelled subsidies of other speech happen all the time, right? If you pay taxes in the state of Maryland, maybe Maryland legislators don't make laws that you want to have passed, but you pay your taxes anyway, and they go towards things like public education or Medicare or Medicaid or Social Security.
So while you may not be in a union, you pay non-member fees. And those go towards collective bargaining, which workers who aren't a part of unions still benefit from. And essentially what the Janus case does is it eliminates the ability of unions to collectively bargain for their employees because they won't have the money from non-member funds. And the last bit of news coming out of the Supreme Court this week was a refusal to rule on a DACA case. A lower court, in conjunction with the Justice Department, asked if the Supreme Court would rule on it, and the court refused to weigh in, essentially kicking it back to the lower court.
And this is a big deal, because what the justices have done here, it keeps the arguments going past that March 5th deadline. And now, the fate of those DACA kids hinge on these lawsuits. They don't hinge on an executive order. Now it's a matter of, does it become law? Does it not become law? And that might not happen for at least a year.
All right, and we're here with Juan Herrera to discuss NCAA.
Yep, glad to be here. So we're right on the crux of March Madness, but that's not really what people are paying attention to right now. The FBI has continued their September corruption probe into the Collegiate Athletic Association. Mm-hmm. What's the impact of this so far?
Well, what we're seeing is two things. First, the alleged wiretapping of the Arizona head coach Sean Miller's phone call with the recruit, and also the documents that were released, spreadsheets, just full of names and money given to players from former NBA agent Andy Miller and his associates. So it's just two things that are really putting a bad light on the NCAA in terms of how all these deals are being done under the table, money being given to players, families, and not just for school expenses, but also entertainment, other things like that. So it's really just shedding a light on what's been going on under the table that we already knew was happening, but not to this extent. And it's just names of players in the NBA now, players in college now, major programs. So it's really widespread.
Yeah, and these are big names. We're talking about, you know, first-round NBA draft picks. We're talking about five-star recruits. You know, Markelle Fultz's name is on that list.
Yeah, Miles Bridge, Michigan State, Alabama's Colin Sexton. Mm-hmm. Just big names, Kyle Kuzma with the Lakers, Dennis Smith. So it's not nobody's, you know. It's these big-name players who are being, you know, outed for taking money.
And there's over 20 teams that are listed in those documents. Yeah. So it's really, really widespread. Mm-hmm. What do you expect to see in terms of sanctions, in terms of sort of reprimanding the people who have participated in this?
Well, we've seen it here in Maryland with the whole Diamond Stone thing going on, that Coach Turgeon's denied anything. And we're going to keep seeing that. Sean Miller, of course, the story broke today from Sports Illustrated that a source that they had said that the wiretapping didn't happen until after the recruit was already committed to the school. So what we're going to see is a lot of coaches being, you know, accused of knowing what was going on, and definitely a much stronger answer from the NCAA, who's really kind of just let this thing go on, and we haven't really seen them address it. And, you know, the extreme thing that could happen is that we'll see a change in how the NCAA works with players having, you know, stipends or things like that, because that's really the root of the issue, is that the reason these deals are going on is because there is an economy where the players can make money off the game in college basketball. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Diamond Stone and Coach Mark Turgeon. So even Maryland hasn't been safe from this probe. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we're going to have to keep looking at going forward to see what happens.
Right. No, it's an ongoing thing. And this is probably just the tip of the iceberg. I'm sure more things are going to fall through the cracks.
All right, great. Thanks for joining us today, Juan.
All right, and now we're here with Timmy Chong, who's going to be talking to us about craft brewery legislation.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So what is going on with craft brewery legislation?
It's actually, I found it really interesting. So I'm a fan of craft beers. I'm a big fan of Flying Dog. I did a feature story on their organization last semester and their involvement in free speech. And when I just saw news that, I believe through Facebook, there was something, ads going around for the Reform on Tap task force, and I was seeing that legislation being pitted against another bill, so I thought I'd go check it out in Annapolis, and I did go down there last Friday, and a lot went down. It was very long, and it was very long for a while, and then it got really heated towards the end when the last two bills were on the table.
And what two bills were those?
That was 518, which is the Reform on Tap Act, and another House bill called 1052, which would essentially revert the craft beer regulations to pre-2017 status, because a bill was passed last year that had some incremental improvements.
So who supports both of these bills?
So what was really interesting from the hearing was that there seemed to be extremely overwhelming support for HB 518, the Reform on Tap Act. And aside from that, over 90 state legislators have officially signed that as well. And the Brewers Association of Maryland is also on board. So virtually everybody in the craft brewing community in Maryland seems to be behind the Reform on Tap Act. And from what was expressed by the co-sponsors of 1052 was that there seemed to be some sort of misunderstanding that the delegates on the House Economic Matters Committee didn't really understand that both the current legislation and the proposed 1052 were ill-received. They were kind of confused by that. So Yeah.
And who have you been talking to about this? Who are your sources on this? How'd you get in touch with them?
I've been in contact with the comptroller's office, talking with Alan Brody. I also had a few words with the comptroller himself prior to the hearing on Friday. Delegate Wilson, the comptroller, and Delegate Kramer were the main people I talked to.
So what was your strategy for reporting this piece?
I feel like my journalistic process is kind of messy. I like to gather all of my information and have it on a mess of a document, and then I essentially just go back and restructure everything at the end.
Anything else you want to add? Anything you want to tell people about your story?
It's going to be up on cnsmaryland.org.
Go check it out. Craft Brewery Legislation from Timmy Chong.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming. And that's it for us this week on the Washington Bullpen.
Yeah. You can find us on cnsmaryland.org. A quick shout out to our music by Brenna Carroll. I'm Julia Caron.
I'm Jared Golub. Thanks for joining us.